This is Soho Radio.
Hello everyone, what a beautiful day. It's as beautiful as Brexit bitch Tim Martin being all over the media again. Just wish Mr. Weatherspoons would fork off. Boom! Hey, I'm Bibi Lynch and you're listening to Bibi Does Soho on your fantastic Soho Radio. I'm all yours the next 2 hours. Shall we do it?
Call my name, ooh, so sweet, to make your kiss incomplete. When your mood is clear, you quickly change your ways. Then you say I'm untrue. What am I supposed to do? Be a fool who sits alone waiting for you. See the light of your smile, calling me all the while. You are saying, baby, it's time to go. First the feeling's all right, then it's gone from sight. So I've taken out this time to say,
I'm Bibi Lynch and that was Stevie Wonder and If You Really Love Me. I don't know what I'm going to do when Stevie dies. He won't die.
Why did you have to say that?
What do you mean?
That's a very negative thing to say after enjoying the record. I mean, we all die eventually, but you don't have to mention it. Honestly.
I love him. My point is, I love him. I'll be less bothered when you die with that attitude.
Well, thank you for that and Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Hey, how are you? What's been happening to me? I've got a black eye.
It really doesn't show.
Does it show?
No, it doesn't show.
Can you die from a black eye?
Yes. Eventually. Everyone dies.
Do you know what? I'm sorry, Stevie Wonder, if you were listening. That's a terrible thing to say. Ask me how I got it.
How did you get your black eye that nobody can really see?
So in the middle of the night, I didn't want to wake anyone flat up and I didn't turn the light on and I walked into a wall. And then I instantly, I put my finger up and I thought...
Is that really what happened?
No, that's true.
You didn't get into a bar brawl?
Another one. In Audi, a middle aisle brawl in Audi. And I put my finger to my eye, to the wound. It was only a tiny little thing. And I felt blood. Oh. And I felt nauseous. I would have been a terrible tree surgeon. You getting excited about Christmas?
Yeah, it's nice Christmas.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It's nice, isn't it? Yeah. We had an hilarious email from the people at Soho Radio saying that we weren't allowed to play Christmas songs until December 18th. So, and I believe it's December 18th today.
So we're allowed.
We're allowed.
We've got a couple coming up later. We're not going to go.
Yeah, no, we're not going to go crazy. We're totally going crazy.
Because this is the last show we're going to do before
Christmas. Well, I've got five more. My eye's got its own gig. It really hurts. I'm so sorry, Stevie Wonder. Let me tell you about today's show. Our first guest is award-winning and critically acclaimed comedian Sindhu V. Sindhu will be telling us about her latest show, Sandhog, and all about her Soho. And in the second hour, we'll be joined by Yola Pierre Sagowska-Jackson. Bless me for saying that. Thank you. Curator of brilliant new photographic exhibition, hashtag My London, which is Polish for We Are London. It's a really gorgeous exhibition. And then, oh my God, we have a lovely surprise for everyone and for the police. Radio God and my stalker, Russ Kane, will be here to talk Christmas and injunctions. So please join in, tweet at Soho Radio and at BB Lynch. Tweet and say hello and tweet and tell me what you're up to Christmas. But bear in mind, I really don't give a shit.
Honestly.
I'm letting him do his final bit, Nick.
Okay, no, it's nice.
He put a lot of effort into it.
Yeah.
He's only number one.
He's only UK number one.
Why was that?
I asked the British record buying public.
I can't stand the British record buying public. Can I apologise again to Stevie Wonder? I know you're never going to die, and I'm sorry to even. I've said it again, haven't I?
Yeah.
Okay. This is BB Does Soho and Soho Radio Culture, Soho Radio London.com and Click and Culture. And we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio. And that was The Most Beautiful Girl in the World by producer Nikki. Guess what? Our first guest is here. Welcome to Soho Radio, comedian Sindhu V. Hello.
Hello, hello.
How are you?
I'm very good. It's not raining, and Christmas is here.
You excited?
I love Christmas so much.
Oh, do you? Why?
Oh, my God.
What's wrong with you?
Maybe because I grew up in India, so it was such a novelty, do you know?
Oh, okay.
And last week I learned a great word for Christmas, which I now use all the time. What? Crimbo.
You just, that's so
I literally cute. Just, and I mean, I've been thinking, I've been living here so long, but I've been living in this very tight kid bubble. And you know, kids, little kids don't say crimbo.
They don't say crimbo.
And so I didn't know. And then last week my agent sent an email with gigs and said, Crimbo gigs. And I looked at it, I thought, what is this Crimbo? So I wrote back to her, I said, who's Crimbo? I thought it was a club. She's like, who? Crimbo's a word for Christmas. And I was like, oh, I love that.
That is cute. Have I love yourself. That. I wonder what other words you don't know.
Oh, so many.
But
so many.
I don't know. I can't even throw one at you because how would I know?
There was, well, you know, like if there are proper English words, I do know them because English, you know, I went to a convent in India.
Did you?
Yeah, the nuns were all very.
How was that?
It was a good school. I mean, everyone sort of either went to a big city good school, like a big city school, or if you were in a small town and if you were lucky enough to have a convent school, you went there. And all the convents were similar. I went to Loreto, which is Mother Teresa was a Loreto nun. So it was a little strict, I guess.
That was kind of a name drop.
Yeah, slight one. Yes, Loreto nuns, Mother Teresa. I went to the same school.
Oh, so the white cloth with the blue.
Yeah, but that's what they did it when.
Trimming.
So she
the
came
trimming.
To
trimming.
Yeah, it was a kind of a trimming. But the nuns we had were still in Western.
Yeah.
And so we had Mother Superior, who I never saw her face. You weren't allowed to look up. I only used to see her rosary and her socks. You weren't allowed to look directly at her.
It's like Michael Jackson. You were never allowed
she
to look
at her.
Madonna.
Scary.
Really? Was she scary? Do you still dream about her?
No, I don't. The nuns were strict, but I think because I wasn't Catholic, the Catholic girls had to leave once a day and do catechism class and this, that. We were just faffing around. It's also very, very difficult to feel weird about Catholics or Catholicism when you're a Hindu in a country that's 80% Hindu.
Can I ask why a Hindu girl was sent
I
to
know,
a Catholic
why?
It's got nothing to do with religion. It's a good school.
Just good school. But how did you get in? How were you allowed in?
If it wasn't religion-based. India's secular. You could be any religion you like. They just ran the school. And you didn't have to do the religious classes.
Wow. Fabulous.
This is fabulous. Let's move to India.
Yeah, oh, please. I wish. Including myself. But no, it's too late for that.
How long have you been here?
21 years.
You've not heard anyone say Crimbo in 21 years.
I know. I know. That says a lot. But then, you know, I didn't hang out with very creative people for a very long time.
Can I say something? Congratulations. Can I just say something? Congratulations. I'm going to tell people about you. This is so amazing, producing it. Bear in mind how long I've been working and the level of success I've got. Sindhu's only started gigging properly. Is this right? In 2015?
January 2015, I started gigging every week.
That was infuriating. Listen to this, Nick. Already an Eastern Eye Theatre Awards winner, BBC New Comedy Awards finalist. This isn't so annoying. An Edinburgh Comedy Awards newcomer nominee. Amazing. Been on QI. Have I got news for you? Has her own radio folk comedy series. There's now Soho Radio. I mean, where on earth do you go from here?
Oh, my gosh.
Where on earth? Is it mad when you hear it like that?
Yeah, I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah,
you know those course, nuns so much.
Yeah, no, but I mean, of course, because when you're doing all these, the accolades are so great. But in between these are all the nights of just schlepping in the rain to an open mic night, signing your name up and hoping you get 5 minutes and then hoping someone cares, you know, because other comics are like, but, you know, it's been such a trip.
Yeah.
And how lucky am I? Really?
It's amazing. So I saw your photo, your poster. I'm living in Hove at the moment and I went to see the amazing Tina C at Comedia.
Uh-huh.
And there's a poster. I went, I am going to meet that lady on Tuesday. So far then, in those like few short years, what's the most extraordinary kind of comedy career moment that you've had?
I recorded Live at the Apollo. It'll be out in January.
Whoa.
And I can see that. It's a fact. I mean, it's coming out. It's a fact.
It's a Crimbo miracle.
It's a Crimbo miracle. That was very surreal to me because obviously Live at the Apollo is such a big deal as a comic. And I thought I was going to throw up into that smoke that, you know, when the thing comes up and you come through, I thought this is really going to be great. I'm going to puke into the smoke, but I didn't. That was a real moment for me.
Not puking.
Not puking. And also just doing the gig, and the gig went really, really well. Good. Yeah. I mean, I think I, you know, I'm born and raised in India, and I always tell my kids, but I'm Indian, which they're half, and they're always like, why are you so aggressive about that? But I think of myself very much as a UK comic.
Yeah.
Very much so. I mean, this is where I was born and brought up in comedy, even though I was born and brought up in India.
That's so interesting. So would your act work?
I have gigged in India. Gigged in India. I think parts of it would. I think parts of it wouldn't, because they don't have the same references. And, you know, I think there's that. Also, when I'm in India, I can gig in... No, thank you. I'm good. I can gig in Hindi as well, which is lovely.
Is there a big stand-up scene in India?
Yes, yes. It's absolutely flourishing. And, you know, several great women comics, which I really appreciate, because it's a bit more tricky in India than it is here to go out and gig and be a woman on stage and so on and so forth. But, you know, you know, stand-ups, you can't keep us down.
So, unless you do that thing to the back of the knee. When, so when you were 21 and here, who are your comedy heroes? Who are you thinking, oh, yeah, I'd love to be doing?
You know, I'd never seen live stand-up when I started doing it. I'd seen a DVD of Eddie Murphy. So I never had thought about doing stand-up. It was a completely something that came. People had always said I was funny, and I'd done a lot of, well, I tried to do some theater in school and been in the choir, things that my parents would let me do. But I had never watched any, I didn't know any English comedians. I didn't know who Eddie Izzard was. Someone said to me, oh, you want to do comedy like Billy Connolly? I was like, who's that? And then I learned to keep my mouth shut and start reading. And the thing is, and this is something I find interesting, in the first few years, I would feel very self-conscious. I would say, people are going to say, well, there's got to be something wrong with her story, because how can you not have known these things? And to that, now I can honestly say two things. One is, when you have little kids and you're not from here, so you don't have any other reference here. You hang out with whoever you know from your neighborhood, or you're in these classes they make you go to or whatever. It's all about the kids.
Yeah.
I know a lot about Thomas the Tank. Literally a lot.
He's funny guy.
But not about this stuff. So I had no reason, especially since I never thought I would do stand-up. And the second thing I think is, when I started to watch stand-up, whether it was Eddie Izzard or Billy Connolly or Wanda Sykes or, you know, Sarah Millican, I felt completely familiar and at home. I was like, oh, of course.
That's because it's what you should be doing.
And that is what it is. So it took me all of a one hot minute to wrap my head around all these different stand-ups and to endlessly, I used to be outside the school gates on my phone, just watching more and more stand-up and ignoring my kids completely.
Yeah, no, you must.
It's like, here's a snack. Please stop speaking.
Yeah.
And tell me if there's a car coming, because I'll get run over because I'm staring at my phone. That's not true. Don't do that. It's very dangerous. So, you know, it was a crazy education, but it never felt weird. It never felt external to me.
But why did you...
Oh, the actual story is so...
Yeah.
Well,
if it's not in your sort of sphere of reference, why did you even think
to do it? So Cindy's got like 2 million degrees, half a PhD, was an Yves Saint Laurent model. You're lucky I've let you in the bloody studio,
Briefly. And I had a very different career before.
An investment banker?
I was an investment banker.
Oh, no way.
Clever, rich, and beautiful.
All of that and an investment banker.
I was an investment banker. I know.
I wish I'd gone to a conference.
I wish I'd looked at a lady's socks for 5 years. Or
no, I think for me, all these degrees was because, I mean, I was, you know, I knew that if I wasn't doing studying or working, or at least studying, I would have to get married. And I didn't mind. I wanted to get married. I've always wanted to be married. But it was never the time to go home and marry someone that my mom had sort of picked. And I had to sort of, you know, it was just the more I stayed abroad, the more I thought, oh, I can be more crazy than this. I'll just do it another year, another year, another year. And the only way to convince your parents without breaking their hearts is to stay at a great university and get a scholarship and be like, oh, but look, I'm studying political philosophy. They're like, okay, fine. Because, you know, education is a big deal to us. And so, and to always do it in the confines of what they found appropriate. Scholarship, never work, you know, like never working jobs. This, that's like, no, I'm always studying. And then doing other things, which I, of course, didn't tell them. And they don't listen to this radio station, so it's fine. But the way I got into it was, a lot of people would say, oh, you're very funny. And I said, okay, fine, whatever. And then one day I got an email from this acquaintance. She was just an acquaintance. And she was doing one of those charity things where it's like, I'm doing this for charity. Come watch me run or whatever that. Just what? I've never understood that. She was doing a comedy evening. Like she was doing stand-up. No offense. Least funny woman I have met in my life.
I am here, you bitch.
It's not you. It's not you. You're already super funny compared to her, okay?
Okay.
So, I mean, you know.
Take her mic down. She's getting out.
So I scrolled down at the end of her email and there was this thing for funny women and I clicked on it and it was like, oh, you know, there's this workshop. Do you think you're funny? And this is something people had been saying to me my whole life. And it was that Saturday, like that day, my husband was traveling and I thought, you know what? 7 or 8 pounds, Leicester Square. There'll be women that are funny, and it's England. Everyone will drink after.
Yeah.
So I went.
Or during.
Literally just, and my parents were visiting.
Doesn't matter if you're not funny, yeah. They'll all be pissed.
Yeah. I mean, and my parents were visiting. I think I was at a low point in terms, not a low point. I was at a real crossroads with what am I doing with my life? And then this thing came along, and I just went to this workshop, and then from there it took off because they were very keen, and then they kept saying to me, come and do the awards. And I kept saying, no, thank you. The workshop's been fine. There were a lot of not funny people and no one went drinking. Like, what a waste of my Saturday evening.
I'm so sorry.
But they kept saying, come. And then I went along and I did it. I was very clueless and I made it to the semi-final. But when I first did that first gig, which was the Funny Women Awards, I remember being on stage sort of disembodied, but also thinking, I can't not do this again. It was just a complete... You know, and I think it's very rare to have had those moments where
I think you're really lucky.
Oh, God, I am so lucky. That's what I said to you earlier. I feel so lucky.
Yeah.
And it's like a little flame in the wind. I always cup my hands around it because I think, who gets that chance?
Yeah. That's so... What was your material for the workshop?
For the workshop. The workshop, we all had to sit in a circle and say, oh, this, that, I don't know. It was fine. But the actual gig, I got there and I thought something will happen, we'll see what. And then I realized that there were women there. One woman who was standing next to me was like, oh, I've been going 7 years, what about you? I was like, oh, I've been going some time, never had done a gig in my life. But I told three little stories about my mother and I, and they just really resonated, I guess, you know. And I've never stopped talking about my mother since. But
does your mom know?
Yeah, you know, she my mother is such a narcissist. I mean that in the best possible way.
There's no other way.
That she always says, look, without me, you'll not even be at all famous. And I'm like, you realize I keep telling them how weird you are. Yes, I am weirdo, but you have a career on weirdo. I'm like, all right, fine. You're right.
Okay, you're okay.
So she's seen your act.
Oh, yeah, she loves it.
And they're super proud.
They are. I mean, because I've done all the other things I was supposed to. Yeah. I had a proper job. I'm solvent. I got married to a person that has not yet divorced me.
Yeah.
My mother's always like, you can be so bitchy. I don't know how he manages. And I've got kids and I've raised them. So now they're like, oh, now you have a little bit of time left. Go do your whatever. But now that it's got serious, they're very proud. And they've also started revealing in the last 2 years things like, oh, yeah, even when you were little, you really wanted to tell jokes. I'm like, why did no one tell me this all this time? And it sort of stopped around 11 and 12 when we moved back to India and I went to the convent. And my mother said, because we were so scared that you wouldn't be academic. You were so non-serious, like one joker. And I'm like, yeah, but didn't you think it was something important? She said, what, joking is important? So no, she didn't think it was important at all. So I think they were quite keen to not have it forefront, you know?
So
but it's come back.
It's come back. You've got Sandhog is your show at the Soho Theatre, and it's about, I love this, it's about your parents and your husband and your kids. And it's kind of like how hard it is and complicated to love people, but you just have this desire to love them.
Well, you have a longing to be loved.
Mm. And you have is a it longing, from that then? Yeah.
Yeah. You have a, who says I want to live without love? Nobody.
Mm. Producer Nick.
Oh, okay, except for Nick.
He thinks he makes him mysterious.
I think that's a Chris.
For the benefit of people not seeing me, I am giving her a very
mysterious look.
Paddington hard stare.
Oh, look at you. Anyway, sorry.
Anyway.
It's your hour. Sorry.
So, no, that's very funny. But, you know, I think love is such a huge part of what makes us function, whether, you know, and yet it's such a hard thing to do, especially to do it completely and absolutely. And there's so many things around us. The presumption is, oh, but this works because you love them. Oh, but this works because you love them. It's like, what does this works exactly mean? I am dying on the inside.
Yeah.
If I have to look at this person for one more minute, I will jump out the window. But you come back full circle. That's why when we meet people who've been married 60 years, we think, oh, there's something about that, that we think this is the right thing. But it's hard.
Well, I haven't got kids. I did controversially have parents and I never got married. But I'm like, so I can understand the kids and parents thing, that there's like, even no matter how awful they are, I'm not saying your family or children are awful, but you know, you love them. There's just something innate. But a partner.
Exactly.
How do you manage to be in love with someone? I can't get a second date. So these 60 years people, I'm like, is it just stupid people are happy? Is that it? I'm not saying I'm not stupid.
But I never said anyone was happy.
Oh, good. Well done.
I never said anyone was happy. And I didn't say in love. I said to love.
To love. Hang on. See? This isn't fun. This isn't fun.
I didn't say it was fun either.
Oh, my God. What are you saying in your show? Is it a musical? At least tell me there's some nice songs.
No, I can't sing to save my life. No, it's not about the... It's funny, I think. It's funny because there's so much in there that's... you know, I think all human experience, but especially love, is really the play between light and dark. And humor is the best way I know to get through the dark. Light is easy. Shit, I'll take light all day long. But the dark, if you can laugh, you can get through it.
Oh.
Hmm. Yeah.
Do you give counseling? No, do you give... So is there kind of advice in the show within the stories, or is it just...
me talking about something. In fact, I would like some advice. No, it's just experience and say, oh, you know, this is how I feel about this.
Yeah.
But what's funny is at the end of the show, so many people are like, oh man, I feel like that.
Yeah.
Oh man, I feel like that, which is really, and I think stand up, this is probably the most rewarding part of stand up, is you have those moments in your set or your show where you are perfectly aligned with everyone in the audience. You're on the same page. They get it. They laugh, you laugh.
That's what makes it magical, when it resonates so fully.
And when everyone laughs. Yeah. And that moment is like when all the things line up and there's just one thing there.
Yeah.
That's really a nice feeling. And it's a gift for me when I can get that.
Mr. Miles, you won't know him, he's my old English teacher. He used to quote a lot. And I always remember his quotes, but never who the quotes were from.
Well.
What oft was thought, but ne'er so well expressed. That's what you're doing, lady. So,
who said that? You don't know.
Mr. Miles.
No,
Mr. Miles said it.
He might be dead. So your reviews are brilliant. The best passive-aggressive ethnic mum routine for years. That sounds so cool. Sunday Times Culture. An exciting new voice, assured, unfiltered and refreshing. This is my favourite review because I just think this is the ultimate compliment. Her style evokes classic American stand-ups. I love that. Who have honed their craft over the years and are able to turn to any subject for big laughs. I think that's such a great compliment.
I also will never forget that quote. And it means a lot to me, not because I don't... because I think American stand-up is any better or anything. It's just the style.
Yeah.
It's a style. And, you know, I think stand-up is at its best when you're just talking.
Mm.
And I think, and your point of view is very clear. My point of view is very clear about these things, you know, because I've been immersed in them for so long. But yeah, that was a quote I loved a lot.
And it's lovely that came from your mom.
Exactly. I was like, oh, really? Mummy? Who did you call?
Mummy? Mums are such sort of rich seams for comedy, aren't they? Because, I mean, there's that wonderful thing that you realise that no matter where you're from in the world, all mums are all the same. Because there's a lot of Jewish comedians that talk about their mother. Ginny, you shared us the whole thing about her Nigerian mother. You know, and it's just, mums are just mums, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Throughout the world.
Mm. And I think what's interesting is to observe how much of your mum you carry within you. Even though you were swearing up and down the whole time that you would never turn out like her. And then you think, oh, God. Especially when your kids turn to you and say, Nani would say something like that. And you're like, oh, shit, you're right, you know. But also the deep appreciation you end up having for your parents the older you get. You
think, my God, eventually, oh,
yeah. You're like, dude, you were right. You were so right.
I've done this to my dad.
Yeah. No, I have that with my dad as well. I just talk about him less because he talks less. But he does talk, just talks less. And I've started talking about him more.
Is that because he can't get a word in, is it?
Well, he's more silent. He reads more. He's sort of more erudite. And mommy's very funny. And she's great company because she's mad. You know, she does the maddest things, and it's so much fun.
You're so good looking.
Oh God,
it's ridiculous.
Please.
What do you use in your hair? Oh my God, she's totally got a secret. She's not going to tell me.
You say like right now, because I had my hair blow dried yesterday.
It's beautiful.
I know, isn't it great? Yeah. But what I put in it every day?
Yeah.
Coconut oil.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, yeah. It's a very Indian thing, though. I mean, just this morning I was putting coconut oil in the baby's hair. She's not a baby. She's, I don't know, 7, 6 sometimes. Anyway, my youngest, and she was saying, because she has long hair, and she was saying, I don't want to put coconut oil in my hair. And I said to her, you know what? First of all, it's really not what you want. And second of all, do you want to have this hair later, or you want to be like 6 hairs on your head?
Yeah, she wants your hair.
And so she said, I want your hair, mama.
Do you put it on?
Your mother.
You've become your mother.
I have. No, my mother would never have even 2 sentences, but she would just give it. So there'd be no conversation.
No discussion about that. No. Do you put it on
here. Only here.
But I get quite greasy there. Can't I just put it on my roots, on my ends?
They don't eat from here. They eat from here. Hair eats from here.
Wow.
No, but you don't have to put a ton.
Right.
You just take a little bit.
Where'd you get it?
Coconut oil?
Yeah.
I mean, these days the West has gone crazy about coconut oil. It's everywhere. I'm sure if you go to Starbucks, they'll sell you some.
Could you buy me something?
Yeah,
yes. Just buy raw coconut oil.
Raw coconut oil.
Yeah, so it's not super processed.
How delicious.
Yeah, and so just put it. But I mean, coconut oil, I put it here. I eat it. I put it on my body. Like, I'm a South Indian, so we are big on coconuts. Big. I eat coconut stuff all the time. I had a coconut shake just now here.
Wow.
With Helen. I can do a lot of coconut.
Oh, you're all about the coconut.
I'm majorly delicious. About coconut.
Why? That's your next show. 20%.
But you know, coconut is also what they call people who are brown.
I know.
On the inside. So really, it could be a show with many different levels of meaning.
We won't do that show. We'll do another one. Let me give some Sandhog info. Sandhog is at Sandhog. Why is it Sandhog?
I can't tell you because they're such a big part of the show.
Oh, okay. It's at the Soho Theatre from the 7th to 19th of January. For more info, visit sohotheatre.com. And for updates on all Sindhu's fabulous projects, go to sindhuv.com and follow her on Twitter at sindhuvfunny.
BB does Soho. Lucky Soho.
I'm BB Lynch and you're listening to Soho Radio Culture. I've got a black eye.
What happened to you?
Oh, I can't tell you.
No, come on. I'll tell you about Sandhog if you tell me.
Okay, no, you can't tell me about Sandhog. I walked into a door, literally walked into a
door. Okay, dude, really? Did you walk into
a
door?
Yeah, no, I did. Yeah. Okay. I was tweeting late at night, being hilarious. And by the time I woke up, it was ugly. And go to SohoRadio.com and click on Culture. And we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio. Coming to you from our beautifully bijou pop-up and studio on Great Windmill Street. I'm joined in the studio by the wonderful Sindhu V. And it's time for My Soho.
Soho Radio. My Soho with BB Lynch.
So before you ever came to... So when you moved over, did you move straight to London?
No, I was at university. Well, actually, yes.
I was at university. Where were you at university?
Oxford.
Unbelievable.
And then I went away to America to study more. And then I came back and I moved to London.
Did you?
Yes.
So when you first came to...
to London.
When you first came,
the time.
I'm furious. You know what? What was modelling like? What's it like being pretty?
Stop. First of all, I grew up feeling very ugly. Because in India, everyone said I was ugly all the time. My aunts used to say to my mother, "How are you?" You know, I was 8, and they would say her eyelashes are nice, but hi, kitni ka? She's so dark, and she's not very pretty. How are you going to get her married?
What?
I was hearing this my whole life because in India, you had to be petite and fair. And, you know, they sell cream in India, which is called Fair and Lovely.
Yeah.
So I was not neither fair and therefore not lovely. But, you know, I had other cousins who were darker. And so I was like, ah, ha, ha, you're worse off than me. Like, that's all. We were little kids. First of all, not a single boy ever said to me anything about, like, you know, like when you're a teenager. You know, like there used to be dances because I was at an American boarding school in India for 2 years. And the boys would come over and ask the girls, and there'd be one girl left on the wall every time, and it was me.
Oh,
every single time. It was horrific. And I think that's why I started developing my jokey side, because, you know, you don't want to be like just studious, you know, because that was even worse. And so never felt pretty at all. Only really started feeling that I wasn't ugly after I moved abroad, where people were like, oh my God, you have great tan. I'm like, it's literally just the color of my skin, but okay. And then in India now, the norms have changed and you have a lot of women who are taller and darker. And Deepika Padukone is very beautiful and so many others I could name. So I didn't grow up at all feeling pretty. I felt very unattractive for years. And that's why when YSL asked me to open their show in Delhi, I was like, I felt like it was a trick being played on me. So, you know,
it's going to turn up. Hi, I'm here.
Yeah. And I didn't have, my friends joke about it. I didn't keep any of the photographs. I made them burn everything. I was young. I was a teenager. Because I was like, I look so ugly. This is like, they put me here because I'm so awful looking.
No.
Yeah, and my parents were not into me modeling. So they didn't encourage me to think of it as anything positive. They just didn't say anything. But anyway, it's such a huge part of my experience growing up was to feel not pretty, but genuinely like my looks were going to be the downfall of me.
But that's brilliant, because what you've done, you didn't play on your looks, develop the rest of it. So you, it's all there.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm happy for you and sort of hate. So you came to London before you ever came to Soho. Mm. What did the name Soho mean to you? Did it kind of evoke anything?
Mm. I used to listen to, there was no, the Indian economy only liberalized in 91, which meant before that there was no FM radio. This was just Indian radio. And my friends and I had my sister lived abroad. And every once in a while, when she came to India, she would put a cassette in a cassette recorder and just record that day's radio.
Yeah.
And so I would get all this music, but like I'd also get ads like Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri. Like, but I was like, what is this thing? You know, I had no idea. And Sun and Fern of Wacky Disneyland. I would just, anyway, all this stuff. Anyway, but I started listening to this song, West End Girls by Pet Shop Boys. And it was so English. And I had no connection to England outside of like colonialism and Raj historic studies. But my sister said, oh, yeah, it's a very Soho-y kind of song. And just the things they would say in the song. And if you have one tape a year, you listened. I memorized everything. I mean, I can still tell you the ads. So obviously I memorized the lyrics. And remember, there was no Google. You just kind of made it up. You were like, West End Girls. And you thought, okay, West End. So Soho for me was very West End Girls. Slightly sad, like melancholic, but also, oh, so many crazy, exciting things could happen. And no one gave a shit.
Yeah. That's like us at home.
Yes, it's like this show.
And so that's what I thought when I arrived here. Was, oh, Soho, that place. I had no idea whether it was that it had a, you know, that it was a big, there was a big LGBT community here. I didn't know that. I didn't know that there were sex shops here. I just remember this song. Oh my God.
Shadows, whispering voices, faces on posters, too many choices. If
I really hate it. Why do you point at me?
I'm cueing you. I'm not pointing at you. I'm cueing you.
That's actually aggressive. And someone with a black eye.
You're giving away the secrets. I say that, and then you say, that was the Pet Shop Boys.
Can you, Sindhu, do you, can you see the, can, are you, is the sexual tension making you feel awkward?
You could never do telly. People point at you all the time in TV studio.
Well, I could do telly.
Well, you must have had people pointing at you. Floor managers.
No, they just stand aside and say, Bibi, just keep talking.
They go like that.
Just keep talking. Fuck you. Hey, welcome to Soho Radio.
We're live on
it. By far one of the most joyful interviews I've had in a very long time. Thank you. I'm really loving it.
Oh, you're just saying.
You're just saying.
No, no, I'm telling you. It's so much fun.
Where am I from?
Do you have any South Asian blood?
Ah, just give it away.
I said South Asian, okay. But it's not all. Yeah. There's a mix there.
Irish.
Ah, you see?
Sri Lankan, Russian Jewish.
There you go. A little bit of everything. And also great. Sri Lankan. Get the Sri Lankan side cranked up for the coconuts.
Should I? Oh, yeah, I know.
They're
Why
big on
coconuts.
I know. Get into the coconuts.
I'm embarrassed myself. Anyway. I'm wearing a bra that's so huge. While you were talking earlier, did you notice I ripped my T-shirt?
I noticed you doing something inside your shirt. And that I'm just going to ignore that. I don't know what's going on.
She's just tweaking her nips. It's because I'm wearing a diamond ring. Oh. Anyway, this is your hour. What's your favourite Soho
house.
Bar, restaurant or venue?
Bar Italia.
Yeah.
Please let me tell you why. Please, please, please.
Please do.
So when I first moved to London and there was a boy I liked and a boy I might have liked, but I had liked in the past from university. And there's a bunch of us from the same university in America. We're here.
Wow.
All studying. Oh, no, all had started working in London.
Yeah.
And so we all had met one evening. All these people, including both the boys, had met at Bar Italia. And I couldn't really figure out who I thought was, who?
Who's it going to be?
Who's it going to be? And one of the funniest things happened is that, so let's call them Boy A and Boy B.
Okay.
And because I really don't want to give away anything about them besides that. So Boy A and Boy B.
Yeah.
Boy B was the one I was like, I kind of liked you before. And Boy A was fine.
Yeah.
But Boy B was more into me.
Yeah.
But Boy A was not that into me.
Ah, so you liked A.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I did. But I was like, you need to stop. You need to break this pattern and kind of just...
Where's C? Go for C.
Well, no. There was no C.
Okay.
Okay, B. What happened was we were at Bar Italia. We'd been out and we got to Bar Italia. We're having coffee and this. And it was pouring. And I had just been here a few months. I was not yet used to this. I was like, why am I living here? This is terrible weather. What decisions have brought
no
me
rain
here?
In India,
not like this. No, there is monsoon, at which point we don't go out because
it's
the monsoon
though.
And it's warm.
Okay.
So, yeah. Anyway, so I got a little bit aggressive there about the monsoon.
She shops at other stores. Don't get her onto Zara. Jeez.
Anyway, so then. In those days, there was minicabs. There was one minicab, right? And this minicab pulled up, and a couple of us got in. And I got in. Boy A, don't forget, got in. And then Boy B came and said, is there any place? And Boy A said, not for you. And slammed the door and said, drive. And I felt that was so... What a baller move, man.
I know, that's giving me goosebumps.
Yeah, baller move. Yeah. And I always associate with Bar Italia how well Boy A behaved.
Yeah. Can I ask what happened with A and B?
I'm married to A. So that's what happened.
Did you?
Yes.
That's so cool.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
No, just baller move, huh?
Does A have a brother?
No, he's the only child, which makes him so much fun.
So not eccentric.
No, not eccentric at all. Just like, you know, there's always one person who's right in the room.
Not even a room. What's your... Ooh, let's hear your second... What happened to B?
Oh, who knows?
He's now the president of America.
No, God, no. I don't know. He sort of wandered off.
Yeah.
Went back to Italy.
So brilliant, though. Went back to Italy.
He's Italian.
Italian.
I can tell you that.
God. I wish I was Italian.
No, but you're such a great mix of other
things.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for noticing.
There's no room for anything else.
There's nothing. I've had some Italian in me. What's the...
It's not even midday.
It's not. Can we...
He's so exasperated. These are good jokes. She's funny.
Thank you.
He just looks exhausted.
Me. Exhausted.
He looks exhausted.
Shattered.
He looks exhausted.
I get blamed when she goes off the rails, though.
It's the last Christmas.
We're live on Soho
Radio. Oh, hi, we're on air. What's your second Soho song?
My second Soho song is Who's That Girl?
Yeah.
By Eurythmics. And
I bet there's a lovely story behind this.
There is. Well, I don't know about lovely. It's complicated. Here's a story. My husband once, well, first of all, I love Eurythmics because I love Annie Lennox. Yeah. Love, 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 love. And then one day my husband was like, oh, I was in Soho and I saw Dave Stewart from Eurythmics biking around. And it made me incandescent with rage. I was like, what? Why are you seeing anyone from Eurythmics when I love Annie Lennox and you don't even care about them? And second of all, why couldn't it have been me and why couldn't it have been Annie Lennox?
Yeah.
And he's like, what do you mean? Like, why couldn't have this world just have been completely different?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah,
I got over it.
You haven't.
This is the much damped down version.
All right.
So really, for me, yeah, every time I think of Soho, I have that little pop of fury.
Yeah.
That he saw Dave Stewart.
Yeah.
And I love Who's That Girl, yeah, and I love Annie Lennox.
This is beautiful.
Who's that girl?
Both Cindy and I are pointing at you.
Sorry?
Cindy.
Yeah, I know.
We're queuing you.
Yeah, I'll cue this. if you were mayor of Soho, what would you do? I've got the funniest thing to tell you. If you were mayor of Soho, what would you do or change?
I would keep it open 24/7.
Yeah.
And I would make sure that none of those big white lorries was allowed.
Ooh.
Because they, you know, I'm always coming out from behind them and then wearing a bicyclist around my neck. You know, it's always this kind of crazy accidents that happen. You don't know. And then you're like waiting and you're peaking and then you look wimpy. So it's either death or wimp.
Yeah.
You know, none of those big lorries, I don't think so. Yeah. But just keep it open 24/7.
24/7. Or just pedestrianise the whole thing?
Yeah, but that's blah.
That's blah, Nick.
Yeah.
Why is that blah?
Because if it was pedestrianised but it wasn't open 24/7, who cares? You'd be all at home sleeping.
Yeah, I love sleep.
And you need a bit of I love sleep.
I love sleep.
I love naps. Oh my God.
No. What's your longest nap?
Oh no, I do the 20 minutes and up again.
What?
Yeah.
I did a 3-hour nap.
That's not a nap. It's not that's a nap. Sleep.
Yeah, it like, kind of made me jet lagged.
Yeah, no, that's a sleep.
It's
naps.
A nap, not a
nap.
Is it? It's not.
So I have 22 minute.
Yeah.
35 and 45.
22 minutes.
Yes, it's in my watch. In my phone. 22 minutes. I mean, in Edinburgh, you need those.
Has anything you said today been true?
I'm trying to think if anything I've said is a lie.
Everything. 22 minutes.
Yeah, because what you do is you hunker into the. I could go into that pile of coats and just go like this, and
this
then 22
is why
minutes.
Cindy was. Very successful.
I can't believe it's the 22. So I've slept through every audition.
You need to take notice of these little tips. And...
No, so I got an email from one of my producers, another producer asked me if I wanted to go on a presenter training course.
And you said, no, I'm sleeping. I'm too sleepy. And I'm
I said, I have never been so offended. But I bet that's not true. I said, I've never been so shocked. I'm sure that's not true. So you know, white vans and 24/7. That's beautiful. Please sum up Soho in three words.
Sexy.
Mm-hmm.
Melancholic.
Oh.
And electric.
She's talking about me.
Oh, that's good.
That's beautiful. Write that down. Yeah. Sandhog is at Soho Theatre from the 7th to the 19th of January. For more info, visit sohotheatre.com. And for updates on all Sindhu's fabulous projects, go to sinduv.com and follow her on Twitter at sinduvfunny. It's been so lovely to meet you.
Oh, man, this has been so
fun.
Thank you so much. And please, and your show sounds brilliant. It's going to be a huge success.
Come and watch.
Yeah, I'd love to. Definitely come down.
And watch.
And I'll...
You too,
Nick. I'll be like, no, don't even. Okay. Thank you for joining us. Introduce your final Soho song, please, and tell us why you've chosen it.
It's called Morning Glory
mm-hmm.
by Oasis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because the album cover of the picture is Berwick Street, which I'd never really didn't mean anything to me until I was there when I first started doing comedy. I had to go see an agent, and it was around there. And I remember, first of all, I remember being lost because I'm always lost. So I remember reading the names of streets. And why does Google do that thing where it, like, it says the arrow is here and then you turn and then it's behind you?
Yeah.
Horrible, horrible. Yeah, so I was doing some kind of, you know, 3-point pivot around Berwick Street trying to figure out which way to go. And I was like, oh, Berwick Street. Then I was like, oh, look, this is that album, those, what I said to you, those brothers that keep fighting, whatever. And then I put it together. So for me, every time I see Berwick Street, I think, oh, that's what happened. And it's Oasis and it's this song. So really not something deep, but it's still true.
But it reminds you of Soho.
Yeah.
Here it is, Morning Glory, Oasis.
BB Does Soho.
Hey, BB.
On Soho Radio.
Jackson 5 and I'll Be There. Hey, welcome to the second hour of BB Does Soho. I'm BB Lynch and you're listening to Soho Radio Culture, sohoradiolondon.com, and click on Culture and we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio, coming to you from our beautifully bijou pop-up and studio on Great Windmill Street. Come down and say hello. If you're too shy to say hi, tweet us at Soho Radio or at BB Lynch. We would love to hear from you. So the brilliant Sindhu V just entertained us with tales of her Soho. And now we have another guest. Welcome to Soho Radio. I'm going to take a breath. Yola Pierre Sakowska Jackson. Whoa, did I do it?
Perfect.
Oh, only because, thank, well done, BB. Well done, Yola. But only because I sent an email going, seriously, how do you pronounce your name? And you're the curator of a fantastic new photographic exhibition called, how do you pronounce it?
Mi London. It means we are London.
Oh.
But it looks like my London.
Yeah, yeah. It's brilliant. It's
a Polish, it's, so you've created it and curated it, and it's a photographic project, and it's to celebrate 100 years of Poles in London, past and present.
That's correct, yeah. And it all works in with London is Open, and I had a lot of support from Mayor Sadiq Khan, who asked me to come up with an initiative.
Did he?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, I chair the Bal Polski, which is a Polish ball. It's been held for 47 years. And my local MP is Dr. Rosena Alencon. And through her, I invited him to come to our ball. And he wrote me a really nice note, which was like, oh, I'm really sorry, can't make it. But would you like to come on board with what we're trying to do to celebrate 100 years of Poles in London? So I did.
What's his handwriting like?
Well, he's really good at typing.
Yeah, okay. what are you doing? So sorry, producer Nick, leave me alone.
You were going off mic, you were doing that.
So sorry. I'm talking about Sadiq Khan.
But nobody can hear you.
Okay, sorry everyone. So he couldn't make it, but he's asked you to join us. So what was his involvement when you... So you went to him with an idea?
Well, I went to meet the community engagement team, and they told me some of their ideas, and I went home, and one of the ideas was to talk about how Poles who are Londoners, this is their home. Mm. And I just thought it didn't really translate very well in Polish as a slogan, and I was really inspired by London is Open. So I wanted to do something that dovetailed into that more. And I realised that, you know, I thought about it, and I'm part of the fabric of London. You know, I've worked in Soho over 20 years. My mum worked in Soho.
Wow.
You know, my mum was a machinist in Ramilly Street.
Yes, that's so cool.
You know, and as kids, we used to get on the tube, come down to Ramilly Street, pop in to see my mum while she was sewing away.
So it's your home?
Yeah, it's my home, and, you know, we are London. And I just wanted to express that in a way that culturally worked for Poles and also worked for English people to English non-Poles, sorry, Londoners who are non-Poles, to kind of understand how we are and how we feel about London.
And especially around the kind of madness that's going on in the world now, I guess it's doubly important to get a message of normality across.
Yeah, it is.
And inclusion.
I really wanted people to understand that, you know, it's Poles have been here for over 100 years. We work in the media, lawyers, we're doctors. Yeah, we run shops. Yes, we serve people in the restaurants and the cafes. And we're really just part of it. And to suddenly pick on us that we're not welcome here is a fallacy. You know, we are part of London and we love London. And so many Londoners love us. You know, we really are part of the London community.
The exhibition's full of really kind of gorgeous personal stories and family snapshots, and it's photographs of people, of Polish people taken in London for the past 100 years. How did you get the photos?
Well, I emailed out, I made a flyer.
That's old school.
Yeah.
Where were you handing it out?
Well, I went all around London to different Polish centres. There's a lot of Polish community centres that we've set up to support ourselves. And I went round and there's a lot of events, and I asked people that at the end of an event just to talk about what I was trying to do to spread the word. So I had flyers, word of mouth, emails, and I set up a Twitter feed as well.
You did it all yourself?
I did. The GLA did help me insofar as they've created a page and a Flickr feed, and you know, I liaised with them, I got advice from them, and I got, you know, a lot of encouragement as well. And we had a launch at City Hall. Sadiq Khan stood up and he really embraced the whole initiative in Milondon and actually said that he totally supports all the Poles living in London. So it worked.
That's so brilliant. So people would see your flyers or the Twitter and then just send in photos.
Yeah. People went to the website and they could click through, or they copied the email address from the flyer and started sending in the most amazing pictures. You know, photos that were really, that they had curated. Mm. So I'm not curating, yeah. You know, I'm not selecting. They curated from their photo album and they sent it along with a memory. And it was so powerful. Sometimes I sat and cried. Just real, you know, genuine tears came to my eyes. And other times I laughed. So we had people who, you know, they came here through tragedy after the end of the Second World War. A lot of sadness in the community at that time. They couldn't go back to Poland, stuck in England, really trying to make something of their lives. Honouring fellow, you know, heroes who died and who died in London, never got back to Poland. There were photos like that. And then there were photos, more recent photos, like young couples strolling across London Bridge hand in hand, you know, like really full of optimism and marching forward. There were a lot of photos of Polish national dances. So yeah. It's a real cultural thing that we all engage in. And I was really interested how through the decades you saw people dancing in the national costume and very formal. And then the modern photos, and it was like jumping in the air and and laughing. And it, I thought it was really great, you know, to see how a community has grown in confidence.
Some of these photos sound amazing. So there's one that was in 1918 of Marie Rambert, the Ballet Rambert founder.
Oh, amazing.
Who sent that in?
I actually wrote to Ballet Rambert.
Did you?
Yeah. And they were amazing, really amazing. They got straight back to me, sent a picture, told me about her life. And they said they were really honoured that I'd included them as a, you know, and recognised that she was Polish, she was Jewish. And she made a big difference to Londoners.
It's so great. And then there's Bieber.
Yeah.
Who I thought I was named after for quite a while.
The clothing.
Fashion designer, sure. Founder. Barbara
Hulanicki.
Hulanicki, thank you. And there's, and this one, this sounds like it would be amazing. In 1943, and it's Piccadilly Circus, and it's the Polish squadron of the RAF.
Yeah, that was amazing. It was Wings for Victory Week, where all of the RAF came out on display and tried to get Londoners, in fact, it was across the country, everyone to collect money to buy more aeroplanes. And this photo, I just came across it. We got a museum called Sikorsky Museum. They very kindly helped me. And they had some photos of this event, of the Polish pilots. So there's one photo of Polish pilots, one photo of the Cichociemni, who were actually the parachutists. I look at the photo and they're vibrant, they're young, they're like marching. And you know what? By the end of the war, so many were dead.
Oh, what was the Peter Jackson film that was just colourised?
Yes, the footage of the First World War.
Unbelievable. Did you watch it?
Yeah,
just
it's amazing.
Incredible. And there is something about, they were young men.
Well, I feel that we need to capture a lot of the memories, a lot of the time. The Polish community is one that's people not really noticed till the last few years, certainly hasn't noticed before Brexit. And we've just been getting on with it. And it's these memories are going, these people are dying. Lots of people are going back to Poland or moving on to other countries. And this is a really great time to capture those memories and capture those moments in time.
Does the Polish community feel unwelcome now then? Definitely.
No, I just think we feel, I can't speak for the whole community. How I feel about it is that previously nobody noticed us. And I'm really appreciative now that people are noticing who we are and I can tell people who we are. I think that I'm a little bit shocked at some of the backlash in the most recent years. And I want people to understand and to be more relaxed about us. We know we're really not here to threaten anyone. I was really lucky. I started work at the BBC and my boss came up to me, I think it was a couple of days into the job, and he came up to me and said, "Oh, so you're Polish." I mean, like, he didn't even know by my name. And I said, "Yeah, I am." He said, "Oh, fantastic. I'm so pleased to have you on board. Poles are such great workers. You know, you've been in the RAF, you've been fighting for Britain." And I was, this was 84, so, you know, it was a long time ago. And I was like, "Oh, gosh, you know, I'm really honoured to be working here."
The exhibition sounds like, what's your favourite photo?
It changes all the time, all the time. I've got a lovely, lovely photo of there's a lady who was, her parents were soldiers in Italy, and at the end of the war, they met, fell in love, and gave birth to her. She arrived in the UK with the troop ship as a baby, and lived. Her parents moved to London, found somewhere to live, and there's a photo of her and her sister and brother, and it's coronation day, and there's a coronation party, and she's standing in the photo where she's dressed as a gural, which is a mountain person with a special costume. Her sister's dressed as the queen, and she's dressed as a lady, and everything was made from crepe paper.
Aww.
By the uncle who lived with them.
What?
And they actually won first prize at the school fete.
That's so cute.
For the coronation day. And I think in that one little picture, which is just a snap, you've got so many layers of stories and histories and memories. I just love it.
Where can people see? So when the photos, are the little stories written beneath?
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. So you get the little kind of background to it. Where are the... So people can see the photos right now on the GLA website.
That's correct. And you can do it two ways. Mm. You can Google GLA hashtag Me London, as it's My London DYN, or london.gov.uk/Me London DYN.
Will there be a physical exhibition?
I really hope so. I really hope that in the new year we can get a physical exhibition out of these, because I think there's something very precious about these.
I'm just going to look at one now to see how gorgeous
that
is.
Yeah, there's a whole stack of them here. They're amazing, aren't they?
So that's Lambert just lounging.
So elegant lounging.
So elegant.
I can't even pose elegantly. And she's just lounging on a car.
I know. It's amazing. It sounds like such a gorgeous exhibition, and really pertinent timing, I think. And congratulations for getting it together, blimey. And let us know when it goes physical. So thank you. Goodbye. You have to pronounce it again. So
Me London.
Me London.
Sorry. Hashtag Me London.
Can be viewed on london.gov.uk/events and follow. What's your Twitter?
It's London_Me, or just look for hashtag Me London and you'll find me.
Okay, and then hopefully there'll be future exhibition news there. Thank you so much for joining
Thank
us.
You.
Thank you so much.
If you see me walking down the street and I start to cry each time we meet, walk on by. Broken and blue.
Made believe you never see the tears of cry. Now you really gotta go, so walk on by.
BB Does Soho. Lucky Soho.
Nick,
yes,
can you say who that was while I took my earrings off?
That was Joe Jackson and Stepping Out.
Keep talking, I've got an earring to go.
Why do you put your ear?
I just feel like I need to.
She's getting for
you know, the levels of incompetence are like the Mariana Trench.
Yeah,
that's all I have to say.
All I
how no one's talking to you, okay. We're talking about you, not to you, Nick. Hi. You're a professional. You're a man of great reputation.
Sure.
And to find you in a dodgy street in the middle of Soho.
Arousing.
No, I don't find him arousing. It's very sweet of you, but No, I may be in Soho, but that's not kind of how it works.
Oh my God, you think producer Nick's ugly?
No, he's a very fine-looking man.
Why do you think he's...
I do think it's amusing that Russ has just sort of started.
It's annoying.
We had a nice big build-up.
We had a lovely build-up.
I'm ready. All right, well...
We had a lovely build-up.
No, it's not like it's live. Go on.
No.
I'm rewinding.
No, so yeah, walking through Soho, you see Nick. Where do you expect to see Nick then?
I would say coming out of the Fiorucci shop.
Oh, Fiorucci.
Oh, really?
Yeah, undoubtedly.
Yeah.
And then...
They do great chocolate.
Not in a kind of linen suit not Thornton's sitting behind chocolate. A palm tree in the sort of foyer of a Grand Hotel or somewhere.
Or, to be honest, where I would expect to see you
holding
is...
Holding a golf sign.
Golf sign.
Where I would expect to sit. Why do you have her? You don't even need her in this show. I'll be honest with you. Carrying baggage on a flight. Christ.
Just serving my community service.
I've already said that on my Facebook today. That was my Facebook post. I'm doing community service because it was either she worked here or Broadmoor. Anyway, I would expect to see you having an elegant tea with your posh... Not you.
Sorry.
You would not be allowed in.
Yeah.
Because you've already told me you're sweaty and you're wearing a T-shirt that, frankly...
I know.
I don't want to be rude. It's seen better days.
I know.
I mean, I don't know if you were cleaning the windows or something.
Two good nights.
Where you sit to... Oh, God.
Well, as I said to Bibi early, radio is the sanctuary for the hideous.
It's not my fault I'm ugly. But this diamond ring...
You could wear a T-shirt that wasn't.
I mean...
Anyway... I would expect to see Nick Carpenter, producer to the stars, having an elegant tea with his posh chums at the Ham Yard Hotel.
Yeah.
Which that's is just where I would expect. Street, yes.
Russ Kane.
Yeah.
Throw a name at producer Nick, celebrity name, and we'll see if he's worked with him or her.
Russ Abbott.
No, actually.
Oh, but I've got a Russ Abbott one.
No one's interested. Okay. Bobby Davro.
Yes.
Oh.
Ooh. John, the late marvellous John Inman.
Yes. I went to his house once.
No.
Whoa.
We had tea, and he showed me all his TV Times awards.
And you met Ron. Did you meet Ron? Always reminded me of Klaus Kinski.
Yes, yes.
He did, because when I did 2 years of Panther with John Inman. I'm free. When I come on, you'll go, I'm free. And so the whole audience, you know, 84 shows going, I'm free, twice a day.
Never
lovely, lovely man.
Very, very, very.
Oh,
and what a professional.
Tea, what a lovely
gin
man.
And it.
Of course.
You had what?
A gin and it. Oh, I'm having a gin and it.
A gin and it.
Gin and Italian vermouth. That was his
tidbit. Yeah. He was so professional. These guys were just... All right, Lionel Blair.
I'm sure. Way back in Radio Mercury days, yes.
Radio Mercury.
Yeah. Like a proper job. Like a real...
Should we
real
just backtrack?
We
played Joe Jackson, and I said, Joe Jackson stepping out to cover for the fact that Bibi was putting her headphones on and had them entangled with her Gypsy Rose Lee earrings.
Yeah. Thank you.
And they've turned her ears.
And then
green.
We were going to introduce the next guest, but then he just started.
Guess what, everyone?
What?
Our final guest of the year is... Here, welcome back to Soho Radio, broadcasting legend and friendo show, Russ Kane.
He grinned. Yeah. He loved that.
He loved it.
Broadcasting legend.
Loved it.
I love that. I am so easily pleased. It's pathetically grateful.
Yes. Lil Russ.
Yes, come
Russy
on.
Kane.
Yeah,
he
move
was
on.
Russ Kane before any of the others.
Are we allowed to call you Russy Kane?
Well, it can. You can call me Russy. I don't mind.
What's your nickname? What do people call you? That you know of.
Your Royal Highness, or mostly Sir.
Sir, that's
I find.
No one's ever called you Sir.
They do now that I'm old.
Oh.
They do. Excuse me, Sir. Is that seat taken?
Oh.
It is now,
it
son.
Is
no, they just call me Russell. My closest family ever is Russell.
Yeah. Russell?
Yeah, that's my name.
But...
that's my name.
No, but the full... Well,
when I started at Capital, I just wanted to be... Russell, and they went, no, you can't do that, it's not catchy enough. I said, well, that is actually my name. And they said, no, it's got to be Russ.
Yeah.
So I became Russ. I'd never been Russ before.
Oh, really?
No, never. No, it was always
What's
Russell.
What's your middle name?
Alexander.
Oh, you look like an Alex.
Yeah.
You look like an Alex.
Yeah, right.
You also look like a Deborah.
How
are you? Have you been?
Did I really need to come in?
Have you been?
I can be insulted at home.
Do you have anything to promote? Are you?
I guess
we've got loads of stuff to talk. Have you been?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Oh,
yeah,
you look well.
I'm all right.
You've got a new style. What's going on?
Well, yesterday I had lunch with Chris Tarrant. It was our Christmas lunch for the old breakfast show crew, which only lasted 6 hours. It was marvellous. And I walked in and
who paid?
Chris always pays.
Does he? We
see each other 2-3 times, 4 times a year or more, and it's the same gang. See, Bibi, you won't understand this.
What's that?
But Nick would understand this.
Loyalty.
One, loyalty. Two, that outside of the working environment, you're actually pleased to see your old colleagues. Something that is completely alien to you, Bibi.
Honestly, was that even in English?
No, I know. You've got the words loyalty and pleased to see. Words I realise have gone over your head.
You two really should stop flirting.
I know, she wants me.
I do want you.
I know you do.
But to change the bloody record. I want us three.
First three calls of the
I started the show by talking about Stevie Wonder being dead. And I feel awful because he's not dead and he's not even ill. And I love
him.
What
the hell did you do that for?
Because I was trying to say I'd be so upset.
She would be upset when he finally dies. And I said, well, we all die eventually. But there's no need to talk about it.
No, he's not dead.
He's not dead. I love him.
He's a genius.
Isn't he a genius?
Absolute genius.
I love him. Apparently he touched my auntie's face and guessed her star sign. Anyway, Russ, so I thought we...
Just leave that hanging, Nick,
I thought us three.
I'm not sure I can be asked to even ask.
I thought us three would talk about Christmas. So it'd be like two virgin men and one wise woman.
Right, moving on.
Literally all show I've been waiting to say that.
Yeah. Did you stay up all night writing that?
Two-thirds, and then I walked into a door. I tried to kill myself via my eye.
Were you walking in the kitchen to cremate something, or what were you doing?
I must cook for you someday.
No, please don't. I'd rather take my
chances crossing... Could you get me on TV to do a cooking show? Could you do that? Do you know people?
I know.
He's not without influence.
First of all, I do know people, but the thing is this, even though they scrape the bottom of the barrel for beyond Z-listers, even they have their limits.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that's true. Even they, the people who create these magnificent television programs starring people you've never heard of. Every day on Twitter, they go, Fred Smith. The drama, Fred Smith has broken up with Doreen Jones. And I'm like, who are these? I always reply if it's Metro, Daily Mirror, The Sun. I go, I genuinely have no idea who these people are.
The people in the jungle and all the people that do the dancing thing. I have no
the
idea.
It's good this year because Emily Attack is Kate Robbins' daughter. So I've known Kate Robbins.
I didn't know that.
Kate and I were engaged.
What?
Yeah, only lasted 20 minutes, but it was marvellous.
Oh, that was beautiful. Do you mean you were trapped in a cubicle together?
Stop it. It was back in the day when we used to party quite hard.
Oh.
And we got on well, so we decided it would be a marvellous idea. Why don't we get engaged? So we went round the party telling everyone we got engaged. And then after 20 minutes, we started to slightly sober up. And we thought, what the hell have we just done? Anyway, so we've been friends ever since.
So you... But you could have kept that going until you had a party and some gifts.
No, and it's not my daughter. It's Mr. Attack's daughter.
Attack.
Yeah, no, we've got the word. It's all right. What's she got? She's like I've been Tourette's like this all day.
I've got truth Tourette's.
Have you?
You can't lie.
No, you've got truffles. That's not the same thing. Boxes of them, probably, at home. Right, Christmas.
Anyway,
on,
so what's your most memorable Christmas? Kids, team, you two. Anyone? Either one? Someone throw something in before I go to a song. I've got a mince pie and I think it might be drugged. What's your most memorable Christmas?
This is like walking into a parallel universe.
This is welcome to my life, Russ.
You are an oasis. No wonder you go away so often. He is away a lot, isn't he? A lot.
Rehab.
But I enjoy... No, that's just rude. When my many children were little, that was lovely.
How many kids you got?
Four. Which is four more than you. Which is strange. And you're always tired.
I'm always exhausted.
Weird because you don't have children. running gag. I used to love it because they were really tiny and the excitement of putting all the presents underneath the tree and doing it real Hollywood styly, because that's how it's meant to be, and then watching their little faces and then 30 seconds later they're bored shitless and playing with the boxes.
The cardboard boxes are way more interesting than the cards.
And you've forgotten to buy batteries and all the rest of it. So I used to think that was the greatest thing.
So what did you do now at Christmas?
Nothing at all?
No,
really low-key.
You do not?
I'm really, really, really low-key.
Really?
Really low-key.
Do you buy presents?
On Amazon.
Do you?
I don't wrap anything. Hell with that. I really can't be bothered.
Yeah, it comes from Amazon wrapped.
It's like a thing. It's like pulling the little paper thing off. So one of my twins is back from uni.
How many twins you got?
why anyone listens to this show. It is out of pity.
Well, usually there's some kind of structure. Somebody's promoting a show or a book.
Well, I've got loads to promote.
We'll be talking about that. Jesus, Nicky.
Okay.
Nick.
I just thought he'd come to...
What? To
and,
Christmas?
And the way that you were blaspheming was rather seasonal.
Who was
then.
I blaspheming?
Oh, move on. move on.
So,
God, it's like swimming through molasses, isn't it? Mm. Nick, boy, you've gone from Radio Mercury to this.
What's your ideal? What's your ideal Christmas, Nicky?
My ideal Christmas is not having to go anywhere.
Yeah.
Not having to worry about how I'm getting to and from everywhere.
Yeah. You don't like people, do you?
No, who does? I do get quite reclusive. Well, hell is other people.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really
said.
Is. Sinatra.
Sinatra. John Paul Sinatra. No, just sitting in front of the television with a bottle of something.
Oh, Vinos.
Looking at a book.
Vinos.
A gin and it.
Gin and it.
I'll have a gin and it.
What's the first drink you used to order? I'll tell you mine. Dubonnet. And I used to go like school discos. Not school discos, but like...
You and Princess Margaret.
Yeah, and I'd go, can I have Dubonnet lemonade, please?
What, because
did
you
say
it
with
fancy?
That face?
Dubonnet.
That facial...
Yeah.
It's quite hot, actually.
Yeah.
I used to drink Scotch and American Dry.
Wow. Ooh. How old were you?
Oh,
Seven. 8?
16, 17, 18, whatever. Yeah.
Dubonnet.
Nice.
Okay.
I was brought up on... Avocar.
No, wow. I knew you were going to say, really?
Yeah, and Mum and Dad would get out the Avocar, a drink that if you've never had it, will make you vom. And I would have this little tiny shot glass of Avocar, even as a child growing up. And then Mum and Dad were really very cool, especially Dad. And, you know, I would drink. There'd always be wine. You want wine. And that's the way I brought up my kids. I was always like, look, I'm not going to make it like it's something mysterious. You want a drink? We'll do it now. I don't want you sneaking out. There's no point. Have a drink. Yeah. Have a cigarette. Have a cigar. Whatever you want. Fine. Because you won't like it. But try it. But I don't want you sneaking around and doing it.
Who's your favourite child?
Well, you were for a while. Until I did the DNA test and realised I didn't know who the hell you were. And you'd been fleecing me mercilessly for decades.
Daddy, it's me.
Yeah. I was quite shocked with that. Who's my favourite child? I love them all equally.
So
he
beautiful.
Said, winking loudly.
That's beautiful.
Well, look at it this way. I got three sons and one daughter.
You love your daughter most.
Which is the one who always phones me.
Your daughter.
Just the one who is just the funniest and... most lovely and phones me.
Why do boys not phone?
Because they don't care.
They do care. They love
you. There's
no
excuse now with texting and
FaceTime. It's like drawing teeth.
Are they all going to see you at Christmas?
Yeah, sure.
Great.
Sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, it'll be good.
Oh, I can't wait. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah.
I want to play a song, mainly because I need to eat that mince pie.
We can do that.
We need some music. Russ Kane, radio legend. I got an email yesterday from one of my other producers suggesting that I go on a presenter training course.
Yes. I think that's a marvellous... I'll be honest with you.
Give that man a medal.
That presenter training course. Yeah, good.
That's sad. That's upsetting, isn't it? That's not. Is that insulting in any way?
It's harsh, but I think accurate.
Okay.
Yeah.
My own benefit. Play this track, because I love it, and I think you two are going to adore it.
I like it, too.
Good.
Russ won't like it, because it's new.
Yeah, Russ will hate it. You're going to hate this, Russ.
Yeah.
Especially, this is for Russ Kane.
Christine and the Queens.
Chris. Girlfriend, from the day. As you used to pass by me, feeling there, baffling a liar. For fuck is you, you don't even taste much better. Came back steaming in sweat in the morning. I muscled in, for I wanted to hold him. Then tripled to let those bird dogs rage through. For fuck is me, for fuck is you, for fuck is you now.
Christine and the Queens. French.
Excuse me?
She's French.
Is she?
Mm. Excusez-moi?
That was called Girlfriend.
That's an O-level education not gone to waste.
Le ciel est bleu.
Is she French? I don't know.
She's French, yeah.
No, I'm not. Yeah. I'm English. You're listening to BB Does Soho on Soho Radio, and that was Christine and the Queens.
You see, now I understand why that person said go to a presenter's course. Because no one understood what you just said.
Why? What
because
do you mean?
Because you just gabbled your name.
You're listening.
Thank you.
To BB Does Soho.
Masterclass from
on Soho Radio.
Legend.
Thank you.
This was Christine and the Queens.
No, right. They're not slow of thinking. They understand that bit. It was no one could understand what you were saying at the beginning.
Really?
You know why? You were embarrassed.
What, of my name?
You were embarrassed.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I hate myself. And now it's coming out.
Now it's coming
like
out.
Like the bruise
you
on my
wouldn't
eye.
Have lasted 5 minutes up in that aeroplane.
What's going on? slightly threatening. This is really good advice, though. Thank God you finally made yourself
useful.
Worth
it's only taken
how
a lifetime.
You two know each other? I've never.
You know those phone
I advertise
boxes.
For
you
him.
Know the phone boxes
I got
on
him
Rupert
loot.
Street? New in town. I'll pay you. Oh. And I thought, well, that's a bargain.
That bloke on Twitter asking me to pay him to have sex with me.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
We are on the radio, by the
way. Oh, sorry. Russ.
Oh, God.
We met on Joe Good Show.
Oh, that's where we met. Do you know what? I was filling in because I, for the life of me, couldn't remember. She's just like, suddenly, like the poor, she's always been there. That's where we met. I didn't realise that. I completely forgot that's where we met.
That is was. The
Joe
delicious...
Good has Joe Good has so much to answer
so much.
For.
She's
so many
me.
People I met through her, and they've all been... And awful. I hate to say this, no, they've all become really good, aww. Really good friends. It's lovely.
Joe introduced me to a boy who I went out with, and he used to hit me on the head with his penis.
We're still on the radio, by the way. The thing in front of you is called a microphone. And how many lessons have I got to give in one show?
I know.
So yeah. This is you're listening to BB Does Soho on Soho Radio.
There you are.
And
there
that is the fabulous voice of the fabulous broadcaster and writer Russ Kane, but broadcaster, writer, and founder. Yes. Of the Espresso Bar.
The Espresso Bar, yes. Thank you for bringing that up
no
in
worries.
A very subtle way.
Thank you. So here's another song. So tell it, what's the Espresso Bar?
Very good. The Espresso, very good. The Espresso Bar is a Facebook group that I founded, and so far haven't lost it, for men 40 plus. And I hate the phrase safe space, but it's exactly what it is, for men 40 plus to discuss real problems. So like one or two people said, oh, is it football? Is it booze? And it's nothing like that. It's talk about in depth and properly depression, health, especially prostate cancer, you know, anxiety, relationships. And at that time, so you've got relationships, not just with whoever your partner might be, but also relationships as your children are growing older. So that becomes really quite tricky. And then, of course, many of us found ourselves as a sandwich generation. You're bringing up young kids, but your parents are getting older. And in my case, I had to look after my mum for 16 years with dementia, which was a nightmare I can't even begin to put into it. So dementia is another thing. And also people writing in saying, look, I'm 50 years old and suddenly I'm on the scrap heap because everybody around me is 22, 24. What do I do? So it's all of these serious things. I don't give the advice. I'm very serious about that. What I do is I have a whole panel of fully qualified experts. I would never give advice on areas that I don't, you know, I'm not fully qualified or indeed licensed to give. And the result is about 2,000 people on it so far, and I haven't really pushed it at all, says he on the radio, but I haven't. And that's, it's some of the private messages I get really make me feel pleased and honoured that I did it, really.
Russ, it's such an amazing idea, because I didn't realise you had kind of experts involved in it. I thought it was just like a forum.
Oh no, no, it's much more than that. If people have specific problems, you know, if they're specific health problems, I will find one of the experts and they will come back. What we made sure is that the 2,000 people or so far on it can't go direct to the expert because they don't have the time. So I will always act as the administrator on this. I have to approve everybody who joins because I want to make sure it's not someone just being silly. And I monitor all the posts and I have to personally approve or not approve the posts.
That's so a lot of work.
Well, I mean, in all seriousness, I do work quickly and I'm very used to that. And it doesn't take me as much time as it probably sounds. But I'm always looking, researching and going through every magazine and periodical that I can find, especially in the States, etc., for the latest health news or the fitness news or dieting or whatever it might be. I mean, it's not like let's get Beachbody ready and all that rubbish that you get in the, you know, in the tabloids, because it's the same thing every year. Either let's diet after Christmas or let's diet for, I mean, it's the same thing. They just change the year of the article. This is much more, you know, if you're suffering from particular ailments, maybe your diet is, perhaps your diet is affected, etc., etc. So yes, there will always be experts to discuss anything.
Is there anything in, do men post about kind of the male status right now?
Yeah.
How because I guess it is a complicated time.
One of the core reasons that I wanted to start it is because I've said it on radio before that I am so confused how you're meant to be these days that when I'm on public transport, which is most days on a bus or a tube, I won't make eye contact with anybody. I mean, that's the state that it's got. You know, when I remember I used to travel with my dad, you know, if there was a nice little kid, he'd ruffle his hair and say, oh, hi, sonny, oh, yeah, lovely little girl. You know, something which is very nice and very innocent. And all of that has been so repulsively tainted that I sit there, I have my headphones on, listening to audiobooks, and I won't make eye contact because I do not want somebody to say, I didn't like the way you look. You looked at me in a strange way. And what, you know, so I'm not going to give anyone the slightest chance to even do that. And that was one of my sort of main reasons for starting it, because we live in a very confusing and very complicated and very difficult time. And you know, the pendulum eventually, as I've always said, will eventually swing back to something of normality. But at the moment, it's very, very extreme, which I understand, because if you have the Weinsteins, and that is just one tiny tip of the iceberg, you know, banking is shocking for that. Any industry, but banking was particularly, you know, it was everywhere. It was flagrant, as far as I was concerned. That's never come out, and they've just picked on, you know, Harvey Weinstein as a sacrificial lamb, which basically he is. I'm not saying he's a nice guy at all.
But because some of the women were well-known as well, and so it made a story because they were well-known people. I think that had a lot to do with it.
Well, Nick, there's two things there. One is they're well-known, so that's fantastic tabloid fodder. Two, I'm sorry to say this, but they're obviously some of the most beautiful women in the world because they're Hollywood stars. I mean, that goes hand in hand. So, of course, that's great for photos to fill the papers. You've got all that. You know, if it's Doreen Jenkins from the accounts department, it's not, I'm not denigrating what happened to Doreen.
But the good thing is that because of that, it has now opened the floodgates, so the Doreens in the accounts departments are now able or feel comfortable to speak out. You could look at it that way.
You know what, I don't think...
It's turned the spotlight on the whole issue.
It's stopped... There'll always be people who take advantage of these situations. That's the nub of it. There'll always be people who do that. But, you know, I was in advertising in its heyday, and obviously at Capital Radio for 20 years, and it was huge fun. Whether you were a guy or a girl, we all had fantastic fun. You couldn't do any of that amusement and fun and enjoyment now, because it's past.
Male menopause? Does it exist?
Yeah. Does it? It does. Funnily enough, only yesterday I was having a discussion with somebody about that. They're now saying, yes, there is a kind of equivalent. It's obviously not the same thing with all the... I always love it when you're in restaurants and suddenly loads of ladies are fanning themselves with fans that miraculously come out of their handbags. Yeah, there is that sort of... And also, you know, libido and all of those things, which is why the espresso bar, which I said is on Facebook... And you'd be welcome to join. Not you, Bibi. No, not you.
I've tried three times.
I was an early adopter.
You were an early adopter.
First people you contacted.
Thank you.
Like the day or so it started.
I really, really appreciated that. But it's some of the messages, like, I didn't know where else to go, and thank you. And it's not me. It's the everybody else. It's all the other 2,000 people who are exchanging their views and its ideas and... I hope it's been helpful, and I hope I'd like it to grow. I'm not making any money out of it. It's not like people sitting at home now listening to this going, oh yeah, what does he charge? Nothing. It is merely a service.
It is interesting. Well, I'm a member of it, and it, you know, it's a Facebook group. So just as you scroll through Facebook with all your other friends and posts, the posts come up if you're part of it. Very often it's not anything that particularly is relevant to myself, but it is interesting to read. You know, and every so often you'll see something that you think, oh, that does resonate with me. Yeah. And then you might comment or interject or what have you.
And as tricky as times are, at least times give us the opportunity to have forums like that as well. So this wouldn't have existed 5 years ago,
no,
I guess.
No.
We're going to play a track because it's Christmas.
Yes.
I've asked everyone, God, you should have heard the rubbish I got from producer Nick to my left when I suggested we all choose our favourite Christmas songs. But anyway, we've done it.
He's not to your left. He's sitting directly opposite you.
He's to my left.
No, well, if...
And he...
How do you even deal with this?
What I'm saying is we're going to play a song and then we're going to talk about something else that you're involved in.
Okay.
It's that strip group.
Well, this is the song that Russ chose.
Yeah.
Oh right. Okay.
What
good.
Do you think of it, Nick? Let's see.
Well,
honestly,
I think it's a fine choice.
It's a fine
choice.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Thank you.
No,
thank you. It's my favourite Christmas song.
And it's live, so it's got that sort of.
Yeah, it's got that.
I'll just play it.
Would you like
to
introduce it?
After the Rolling Stones, the greatest rock band that's ever graced our planet. It's Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band.
See you when you're
producer Nick, quite rudely, invited, well, I invited Ross Kane onto the show, and then I said, Ross, hey, it's Christmas. I'd like to give you the gift of music. And so I suggested, Ross suggest his favourite Christmas track ever.
Which we just played.
Partly. So producer Nick has now insisted that we scratch that track.
No.
Yes,
no,
he did.
He didn't scratch it.
Yes, he did.
He didn't scratch it. People are very familiar with the track. And I think he made an executive production decision.
Why are you
on his side? Thank you,
because, because when I take a view of how my future might pan out and who I'm going to need, the words B.B. Lynch don't really appear.
Plus, Russ is here in person, and it's better that we hear his pearls of wisdom from his very own lips rather than a recording of Bruce, which people can
listen to any time.
Absolute creep. Anyway.
Yeah, I know. But look where it's got me.
What are we looking for? What are we looking forward to in 2019, Russ Kane?
Well, you know, it's either going to be a fantastic year. No. Or it'll be the same usual rubbish that I endure every other year. But there's a lot. For once, I'm vaguely looking forward to it. I mean, for once. I rarely say that.
Why?
I normally go, "Why?" Well, hopefully, where we're launching, Espresso Bar goes on Facebook. And then on January the 6th, he said, just segueing this so neatly you didn't even notice it, we are launching the logical extension to this, which is Men's Radio Station, which will be online before everyone gets excited.
Fabulous.
It's going to be online. It'll be live. It'll come out on a Sunday from a studio in Covent Garden that we've got. And that's going to be, again, all with experts coming in and talking and hopefully phoning us. That's Men's Radio Station, which I'm really
excited. That's really exciting.
Which is the mirror image of what already exists, which is Women's Radio Station. So I simply said to the guy who runs it, who I've known for years, I said, well, this is nuts. Why don't we do the male version?
Get rid of the woe.
I like that.
Get rid
and
of the world.
That's going to be... That
See,
could be one...
It's worth putting up with it, because every so often there's a...
Is it really?
Yeah.
Is it really? I couldn't come up with a strapline after being in advertising.
But you've been in radio forever, so what about this is really exciting you?
What about that? I've never had my own radio station before, so that's quite that's quite a novelty. And, it'll either be interesting work or it'll just fade. But at least, you know, I always think in life the important thing, give it a go. Then you can say, I've tried and I've given it a go, and that's it.
We've only got 2 minutes for your Christmas choice.
Right, I'm going to say goodbye and thank everyone.
Okay.
Russ, was it worth coming in?
Not really.
Okay, so I need to... you know what I haven't told everyone? So some of you might know this. We are now part of Mixcloud Select. I'm totally ignoring it. It's a cool new subscription service which allows listeners to subscribe to Soho Radio to get some extra benefits, such as being able to download shows to listen offline and see the track list up front. Get involved. So I need to say goodbye and thank my guests. I'm trying to do it slowly because I can see Russ looking at me going, no one can understand. Thank you, Sindhu V. Sandhog is at Soho Theatre from the 7th to 19th of January. For more info, visit sohotheatre.com. And for updates on all Sindhu's fabulous projects, go to sindhuv.com and follow her on Twitter at sindhuvfunny. Thank you, Yola Pieskowska-Jackson. Right now, Me London can be viewed on london.gov.uk/events and follow at linton_.
You know,
my on Twitter for future exhibition news. Thank you, Russ Kane, you awful man. For updates on all Russ's very exciting projects, follow him on Twitter at Russell Kane. Thank you, producer Nick. Most of all, thank you for listening the whole year. We've had such a blast and we hope you've enjoyed it too. That's it from me, B.B. Lynch.
Guess what?
What?
There's 25 seconds left of the show.
Yeah.
So we can't play your choice now because you've been talking too much.
Yeah.
So we could just go out with a jingle.
Do you know what, everyone? That's Christmas. That sums up Christmas. Put on a bloody jingle.
Have a good one, everyone.
Livid.
BB Does Soho.
Hey,
on Soho Radio.
Hey, baby,